Hello and welcome to another episode of the Future Sox Podcast. My name is Mike Rankin. Good to be with you again. Appreciate you listening every single week through the Blue Wire Network. Every Tuesday, here we are again, sending out another podcast for you. Thanks so much for coming back or tuning in for the first time. Welcome in. James Fox alongside us. He is the senior editor at Future Sox. I'm also the lead editor at Future Sox. And together, we are the Future Sox Podcast. We're also partnered with SoxMachine.com. If you'd like to become a patron and support us even more so than you already do, consider becoming a patron because it helps us grow and do more and do more and do more. And that's what we want to continue to keep doing for you. So we appreciate all the support. Go to FutureSox.com for all the information. James, there's a lot to get to today. We have an interview upcoming with Mark Gonzalez, longtime sports journalist and a fixture in this town. If you follow sports, like I say in the interview, you know who Mark Gonzalez is. So excited for the listener to hear that. He touches on a few things that are relevant to what we're doing here at Future Sox, including the MLB draft, hearing some perspective from scouts, and also looks across the organization and gives his evaluation after knowing them pretty well because he started the beat in Chicago in 2005. A good year to start with the White Sox, went all the way through to the late 2010s, and of course, you know him as well from covering the Cubs. And here we are, James, talking about the White Sox. We already had our big league conversation last week with Josh Nelson. This is a little bit of a reset for us here, James, because there's some minor league news that we need to hit on, including Jorge Vera making his professional debut for an affiliate. I mean, that's a big deal. That's a huge deal. There's some scouting going on within the organization with their own players, so maybe we'll see a call-up. We have to talk about the Major League Baseball draft coming up in July, as well as some players that are doing pretty well in the big leagues right now that were former White Sox. So all of that is on tap prior to Mark Gonzalez. But first, James, welcome in. Let's start with Jorge Vera. I mean, this is finally what we've been looking for. Pretty huge development now that we're into June. We get to see Vera pitch for an affiliate.
Yeah, so, you know, I think definitely the best pitching prospect in the system. I mean, I know guys like Christian Mina have been exciting. Sean Burke has made his way up to Double A now, which is interesting too, but nobody has the type of upside that Jorge Vera has. You know, I think he's 22 now. He was signed out of Cuba. You know, all the reports and people that I've talked to say that he looked really, really good out in the desert. I mean, he was pitching an extended spring, recovering from a lat injury. He was sitting 96 to 99 with just nasty stuff. So, you know, he's going to go to Kannapolis, you know, the day this post Tuesday they play. I would imagine he will pitch this week at some point. It hasn't been announced when, but, you know, you can tune into MILB TV to see the Kannapolis Cannonballers, and he's one that you should watch. I think he could move pretty quickly. I think if he, you know, I don't think this is a league that should give him too many problems. So I wouldn't be surprised if he ends the season at Winston-Salem, and then you're talking, you know, Birmingham next year, and he's going to be on an innings limit, I would imagine, because he just hasn't pitched that much. But, you know, he's really exciting. I know somebody that you're super high on, and is definitely a top five prospect in this system for sure.
Yeah, 22 years old, just turned 22, and now you want to kind of slow your roll a little bit this year, given the developments to the start of the season where he was injured up until, boy, late May or so when he was finally throwing again. So that's huge. I mean, he's got two plus pitches, a fastball, and a really good slider. So we'll see how that develops, and you just want to see him work. I mean, a guy, like I said, at 22 years old can kind of skyrocket through the system quickly if all things work. So maybe in 2 years, we'll see him in the big leagues, but who knows how that works out. So the Jorge Vera news is really encouraging. Here's something else that's encouraging, James. Rick Hahn in Double A, scouting a player. Give us the lowdown here.
Yeah, so I don't know for sure. Like, you know, maybe Rick Hahn went in and saw the Tennessee Volunteers because Drew Gilbert and that team is loaded with, you know, potential options for the White Sox in the upcoming July draft. But, you know, I was told that Rick Hahn and Chris Getz were in Tennessee for the Cubs Double A affiliate, Tennessee Smokies. So Tennessee to see the Birmingham Barons where Lenyon Sosa is. And it was basically there to see Lenyon Sosa. You know, there's other players, there's Cespedes and a whole bunch of other guys in Double A, but, you know, my understanding is like this could possibly be wondering whether they should promote Lenyon Sosa straight from Double A to the big leagues, or whether, you know, they make another move and he goes to Charlotte first. But I think he's definitely on the radar. We've been talking about him. I mean, it's like a 144 WRC plus, I believe, like in double A with 10 homers. I mean, he's really been very, very good. Now, the one thing that I would push back against is just, you know, he has struggled when he's gone to new levels. Like if you look at, you know, his history. Now, he's never been this good before, but he's always been young for every level he's at. He's always taken a little bit of time to get going, and then he's been pretty much league average everywhere. So is that an indicator that he would go to Charlotte and struggle initially, or he would come straight to Chicago and struggle initially? No, but it's worth noting that that's like in this guy's history. But he's 22 years old. He definitely has a lot more upside than a Yolbert Sanchez. Now, I could completely understand where, you know, if Rick Hahn's going to call a guy up, he wants to call a guy up that's going to stay up and not have to go back down a bunch of times, right? So, you know, this seems to fit the profile of, okay, this could be our second baseman for a while, whereas Yolbert, maybe they see as a utility type, so they're really not as worried about just like getting him to the big leagues as a 25-year-old. It's something to monitor for sure because, you know, they've already made the Dallas Keuchel move. I would imagine Josh Harrison would be the next domino to fall. So, you know, I think we should have clarity over the next month or so, I would think. But, you know, it's definitely interesting that Hahn was there specifically to see Lenin Sosa.
Yeah, it's absolutely a big deal. We saw the way that the White Sox trusted Romy Gonzalez with some playing time, and they weren't afraid to continue to move him up the system when things were going well for him. And Lenin Sosa, everything is going well for him. And this isn't just a trend. I mean, it's been pretty consistent this season. And Yolbert Sanchez, that's a great point. He's older. Maybe he can be more consistent as not somebody who you want to give plate appearances to every single day. But the fact that the White Sox are interested, it's even maybe a move to look for next year to say, you know, Mendick and Leary and Tim Anderson right now are doing the job. But realistically, how are we going to fill second base moving forward for multiple seasons? Maybe Lenin Sosa's that guy. So let's just let's stay optimistic here. And hopefully that's the case. James, this is the moment we've all been waiting for. The Arizona Complex League and the Dominican Summer League start. What do you got? Who are we looking for? And is the Arizona Complex League, is that going to be worth a follow this year?
I mean, you could follow some of the guys. It's very strange because the season started, you know, yesterday, Monday the 6th as of this recording. But it's weird because the draft doesn't take place till July 17th. So like the players in the Arizona Complex League are, you know, some high school players from last year and recent international signings and free agents and guys out of indie ball. So it's, you know, to be as frank as possible, I'm not sure that the Arizona Complex League team is going to be very good record wise just because of how the White Sox typically do business. Like they took high schoolers last year, but those guys are in full season A ball right now. The two big ones that everybody knows about. And in the international market, they've been signing so many like older Cuban types that those guys are at full season affiliates too. So the types of players that are in Arizona right now are super raw, you know, so it's just, it might be a struggle. There are some guys to pay attention to. You know, we talked about Yoemi Nolasco a couple of weeks ago, Dominican righty that Bill Mitchell of Baseball America saw on the backfield, said that he was the best pitcher, you know, in extended spring. So he's in the rotation. You know, there's another, Carlos Hinostroza is another pitcher that was in the DSL last year. That's interesting. Those are probably the two most interesting arms on the team. And then there's some position players. Victor Quezada was an international signing last year for over 500K. He should be the third baseman every day in Arizona. He hit six homers in the Dominican last year. Manuel Garimán is a Venezuelan catcher that's there. And then Cameron Butler is their 15th round draft pick last year out of a tiny, like, Christian High School in California, where he put up just absolutely absurd numbers. So he'll be in Arizona too for now. And then, you know, you have some guys rehabbing there, but you know, this first month there, it's just going to be kind of weird. You're going to be looking for the guys that you know, and then some pop-up performances and stuff along those lines until the draft happens. And then that team will really, you know, get stocked with players. It's just one of the weird outcomes of a late draft. And then the DSL, I mean, the two most well-known players there, obviously, Eric Hernandez, super exciting. He's a top 30 guy in the system, 17-year-old Dominican that can really hit, supposedly. And then their recent signing, the $500,000 Cuban Loidel Chapelli, will either play second or the outfield most days. So those two guys are really interesting down there. You know, there's another $400,000 Venezuelan shortstop that's like a defensive first guy, and a couple pitchers that I wrote up to. So, you know, they had a 20-player international class this year, highlighted by Oscar Colas and Eric Hernandez and Chapelli. Colas is obviously stateside in Winston-Salem, but, you know, the rest of those guys are all in the Dominican Summer League. And, you know, for anyone that doesn't know, they play their games at like 11 o'clock in the morning, our time. So, you know, if you go to MILB.com, all the results and stuff are on there, and I'm tweeting about them sometimes. But yeah, so, you know, those leagues, you just kind of, you pay attention just to for loud tools, essentially. And, you know, the stats don't really matter that much. But, you know, guys that throw high 90s or bat speed and stuff like that is interesting. And then when guys get promoted a full season, that's when you know that they've, you know, done pretty well in those leagues.
That's very well said, and really well up on your stuff, James, as always. Appreciate everything that you do. Adrian Gill, too, by the way, he's going to start in the Dominican. It's somebody that we've been keeping an eye on for a little while now. So another name.
Yeah, he's like a Freddy Garcia trained guy. So he was one of their signings last year, and then he got hurt.
Right.
I don't know what the injury is, but, you know, he got hurt and he didn't really pitch that much. So he's back there again.
So it's good to see him, the right-hander, getting some work in this year. We'll see. And then, two, what you got with the MLB draft. I mean, that's another point that's rather interesting, is those draft picks go right to short season, and likely a lot of them will be spending a brief period in Arizona, unless they're advanced college players where they can handle maybe an affiliate like Kannapolis or something. But typically these draft picks upcoming, because the draft is July 17th this year, and the White Sox pick 26th. So there's been mocks. I know you and Josh put out a mock draft over at Sox Machine, but there are some names linked already to the White Sox that you're really excited about, as well as our guy Josh Nelson. Just want to get your thoughts on what has changed since we last spoke about the draft and where the White Sox stand.
So not a ton, but I mean, they picked 26, so they have a lot of options. And like, look, the college pitcher light always goes off because, you know, I could see Rick Hahn just making an executive decision to take a college pitcher that's still on the board. Drew Gilbert is the center fielder at Tennessee. He's been mentioned a ton. They're very familiar with him. He could be gone, though, and I don't know if that's option A, but I know that's an option. For me, I would prefer they do the same thing they did last year and just load up with two prep bats at the beginning, preferably two prep left-handed bats to add to the system. You know, Josh Nelson in our latest mock draft had them projected to take Tucker Thomann, who's a switch hitting shortstop out of South Carolina. There has been, you know, some indication that the White Sox are very high on him, as well as a couple other teams in the 20s. I would be very much on board with that pick. Now, you know, they were also linked to Roman Anthony, who's a big power hitting outfielder out of Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Florida, you know, as an option there too. The thing that's interesting about that is Prospects Live came out with their latest mock draft. And some of the guys at Prospect Live are really, really plugged in. And Joe Doyle is a friend of the podcast. We'll have him on closer to the draft. I mean, he nailed the Colson Montgomery interest last year, you know, privately and publicly on our show. He has them taking Tucker Thomann as well in the first round. And in the second round, he has them getting Roman Anthony, who I was just talking about. That would be like an incredible first 2 days, where you add two more left-handed bats to the system to go along with Colson Montgomery and Wes Kath, who, you know, seems to be figuring it out a little bit down in low A finally after some rough starts. So, you know, keep adding young left-handed bats to the system. And I would be a big fan of that strategy, but, you know, we're about a month out right now and things do change quite often.
Couple of names to keep an eye on if you're a White Sox fan and interested in the draft, because the draft is prevalent enough to help the White Sox get out of the cellar in terms of prospect rankings among the organizations in Major League Baseball. Still 30th, but again, you know, things can change mid-season around August or so. So hopefully we see some change in the White Sox status. And what we like to do is follow draft philosophy ever since Mike Shirley took over. It'll continue. Stay tuned to SoxMachine.com and FutureSox.com for all your draft coverage. Now, James, before we get to Mark Gonzalez, Let's talk about this, huh? Connor Pilkington, Luis Gonzalez, and Steele Walker are all in the majors. How about that one? Pilkington traded for Cesar Hernandez. The White Sox let Luis Gonzalez pass through waivers, and the Giants claimed him, if I got that correct. And Steele Walker was traded straight up for Nomar Mazara. Here they are in the bigs with other teams. Now, you can justify every move. I mean, the Steele one, it would be tough, but you could still justify it. You know, Nomar Mazara was a failure. But I understand every decision at the time. However, now in hindsight is for us to celebrate former White Sox doing well for themselves in the bigs.
So I will say with Luis Gonzalez, I mean, it was like a procedural move. You know, I mean, he was on the 40-man roster but got hurt while in the minors. The White Sox tried to slip him through waivers to get him off the 40-man, you know, and the cynical side of people says like, oh, yeah, that's because they didn't want to pay him. But I mean, maybe so. But I mean, he was going to have shoulder surgery. They were going to re-sign him to a minor league deal just to get him off the 40 so they could use the 40-man spot. The San Francisco Giants are 29th out of 30th in the claiming order, and they claimed him because I think Farhan Zaidi might run the best front office in baseball right now. But, you know, some swing changes, and he'd always had some hitability. And, you know, I don't think he's this guy, but he's definitely a big leaguer. He's, you know, rookie of the month or rookie of the week or something with the Giants. So that's a pretty interesting one. Connor Pilkington needed to be added to the 40 man. I just think the Sox just didn't see him as a future member of their rotation, and they traded him for Cesar Hernandez in season. That's a deal I'd make 100 out of 100 times. Didn't work out with Cesar Hernandez. You know, Pilkington went to the Cleveland Guardians, and they, you know, turned anybody into a starting pitcher. So, you know, that's an okay trade, I think. And then Steele Walker, Nomar Mazara trade, not very good, obviously, you know. And at the time, Steele Walker was like already 22 or 23 in high A, and he couldn't hit lefties in high A. So, you know, congrats to all these players. Congrats to, you know, Nick Hostetler, who's, I think, taken some abuse. And we're going to talk to Mark Gonzalez a little bit about that and whether there was like an organizational mandate to add some developed college players into that system. But I mean, look, if you look back into Costetler's four drafts, they might lack a little bit of upside, but I think there's going to end up being a lot of big leaguers from those drafts. Like, so, you know, you take that many college players, you don't get stars all the time, but you know, you have guys that can make a 26 man, and here's three more of them in the majors right here, not helping the White Sox though, obviously.
Yeah. I mean, the Steele Walker example is just the way baseball works. I mean, last year, it looked like his career numbers, you know, considering where he was, suggested that he would be a minor league filler or at the very, very best, back end of the roster type player for a big league club. But congratulations to Steele Walker because he's definitely earned it. He's done a great job with the Rangers this year. So he earned it, absolutely earned it. If you look at his numbers, they've been much improved, and that's not what the White Sox were seeing. And again, we get it too. Like, we were trying to justify the moves, and in hindsight, the Nomar Mazara, just bad, just so bad. But when it comes to the depth in the outfield, the White Sox had sort of a logjam because at the time, Mike Rodolfo, Blake Rutherford were still pretty well considered. Obviously, Luis Robert, and we don't have to go down the list, but Adam Engel too were a part of things. And good times, good times, James. All right, so let's move on now to Mark Gonzalez. I mean, that was, James, this is a lot of fun. I'm really looking forward to this interview, and I'm glad that you were able to land Gonzalez because, I mean, this is one of the best.
He is. He's one of the best in the business. You know, I said it on Twitter. I think it's a shame that he's not employed somewhere full time, like as a beat writer covering baseball in this town, because he's one of the best ones. I know how the industry works. I know some of the layoffs and some of the things that have happened, and you know, I'm not here to take somebody else's job away, but I mean, Mark Gonzalez is pretty much as good as it gets, and him doing freelance work seems kind of insane to me. But he was nice enough to join us, and you know, the conversation will be really good.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, Mark Gonzalez, formerly of the Tribune as well as the Daily Herald. If you are a patron to Sox Machine, you won't get any ads, so stay right here. But for the others, we'll be back. It is our delight to welcome on Mark Gonzalez, formerly of the Chicago Tribune and also spent time with the Daily Herald. If you're a fan of Chicago sports, you are familiar with the name Mark Gonzalez. He's been a part of this city's heart and soul, covering the White Sox and Cubs for over a decade, two decades now, And Mark, it's a pleasure to have you on the Future Sox podcast. We're really looking forward to this conversation.
Thanks for having me on. I enjoy your work.
Well, that means a lot to us. Let's start at the beginning, where it started, what you learned, what were some of the experiences that molded you as a journalist in this city?
Well, I'm very lucky. I actually grew up in the Bay Area covering high schools, and talk about a small world. One of the guys I covered, or I covered his last football game, and I do remind him of it on occasion, is Kenny Williams, who was a terrific two-sport athlete at Mount Pleasant High School in San Jose, California. And remember his last football game, their quarterback was ineligible for the playoffs, and it came down to a two-point conversion attempt, and they ran Kenny on a jet sweep, and I was standing right on the sidelines when he got hit and stopped short of the goal lines. So I try not to bring it up too much to Kenny, but in regards to my career, I'm very fortunate. I started covering high schools, you know, writing 6-inch football gamers, and the boss I had at the time, Chuck Hildebrand, really liked my work and gave me more work, and I really dove into it, made the most of opportunities, and I had quite a few great opportunities along the way. And I made the most out of covering high schools, becoming a high school sports editor for a couple of years, learning all facets of the business, as well as when I covered baseball games. I was lucky covered in the Bay Area. There were a lot of good teams, good players, and good scouts, and I'd always pick their brains on what they were seeing. And that eventually helped me down the road when I started covering baseball on a full-time basis in 1992 with the San Francisco Giants, working for the San Jose Mercury News. And one of the guys I had in my coverage area was a guy named Barry Bonds. So that certainly helped quite a bit, knowing his background and watching his career progress. And then fast forward in 2004, the Tribune inquired about my services. I was covering the Diamondbacks at the time and was elevated a national baseball writer there. And I just gotten married and thought it'd be a little uncomfortable to uproot us all back out here, even though my wife grew up in Highland Park. So a year later, the same opportunity comes about, and I certainly was interested, and we moved out here, and it's been great ever since.
So, you know, you've covered multiple drafts, obviously, as a beat writer reporter. I'm going to get to that, but, you know, you mentioned something, and I have to ask, since we have you, what was it like covering Barry Bonds?
Never a dull moment. And you saw how talented he was in high school, but he still wasn't the finished product. And I remember his last high school game, it was a semifinal sectional game, and he was playing center field, which a lot of people don't realize. He played center field and was very good. And it was at San Jose Municipal Stadium, and he airmailed a throw to home plate, and it hit the screen on the fly. And you kind of told yourself, well, he's good, but there's some room for growth. And he went in the second round by the Giants. There was a squabble over the size of his bonus, difference of about only $5,000, but decided to go to Arizona State, where he became even better. But he certainly had a flair. I actually covered him in football too. He didn't play his senior year, but he played his junior year and was a pretty good punt returner and receiver. But looking back, I think he made the right choice going to baseball.
Mark, you said you were in Arizona prior to coming to Chicago. Were you a part of the 2001 Diamondbacks club covering that team?
I did cover that team, and it was quite fascinating. It actually was a lesson learned for me that it really grasp the moment as a journalist and just absorb everything you can, because you remember 9/11 had occurred about 7 weeks prior to game 7 of the World Series. And so that kind of took on a added meaning as well, as to just the emotional aspect, the healing process of this country, and also a Diamondback team that was rolling the dice. You think of all the veterans that were on that team, and it was all or nothing that year. And it was certainly a fun team to cover. And at the same time, you know, they're going up against a Yankee team that I think 90% of America was rooting for, because they were the Yankees, and you had 9/11 right there down the street. So a lot of emotions involved. And I kind of didn't grasp what was happening at the time. And I really regretted that I didn't soak in more observations that were going on. And certainly I've been lucky enough to cover two more World Series champions in the White Sox and Cubs, and been able to do that since.
Yeah. So I was going to ask, you've covered three World Series teams. So these guys should be jumping down the door to hire Mark Gonzalez as beat writers. You can win the World Series. It's crazy. That's
it doesn't good. Work that so, way though. I didn't strike out anybody to hit a home run.
So another team with World Series aspirations, these 2022 White Sox. We're thrilled here to be covering prospects right now, just because of, you know, how rough it is watching these games. But how surprised are you just by this start? I mean, obviously they got 110 games left. Like, it's possible they're in a bad division. How surprised are you by the start? And just, is there any confidence that they could turn it around and get back?
I'm getting more surprised at what's developing or what hasn't developed, especially the lack of hitting. That's been alarming. We all know that their farm system's a little thin. That's the product of all the graduations to the big league club. And you know, I think every executive will tell you the toughest thing to do is win and develop at the same time. And they're finding that out right now. I think they're blessed that, you know, they have somebody like Marco Patti, who's really identified a lot of great talent in Latin America. And a lot of these guys are hitting the ground running, doing a terrific job. So they can be thankful for that. Draft's always a work in progress, especially when you draft guys and identify what you think, who you think is the right guy. And then you have to trade him to another club to bring back a Lance Lynn, somebody of that magnitude. So they've taken some hits there, but some of it's understandable because they've had to get guys to identify needs on the big league club.
So since covering the White Sox, I'm curious your opinion, watching them in 05 through the early 2010s to now, even as an observer, how would you define the way the White Sox go about their business in terms of building a roster, the way that they've evolved in the international market and now currently in their scouting and development department, adding all the analytics, and also in terms of draft philosophy, it's changed with Mike Shirley now at the helm. Just curious what some of your observations are in that regard from the White Sox early to the White Sox now.
I thought it really started to change shortly before I left the beat in the middle of 2013. They're trying to get more, I want to be careful when I say this, more baseball players as in the past, they were more, you know, athletic guys. Remember the Jared Mitchell types that were, you know, could do it all and hadn't played full-time baseball. And I think now you see more guys that are true baseball guys. You know, the ceiling is something, you know, that's up for question, but it's really changed quite a bit. We see the analytical side a lot more now than we did in the past, and they've certainly addressed that, as have other teams in baseball. But going back to 2005, that was a fun team to cover, but there were a lot of, true baseball players. I mean, Konerko was a baseball guy. Brzezinski was a baseball guy. You look at the pitchers, Burley was a baseball guy. So was Garland. Germain was a true baseball player in right field. The only guy you might say he was all-around athlete was Posetnik with the speed and all that, but he got injured quite a bit. But I think he'd tell you he loved baseball.
Yeah, so one of those guys that you didn't mention him, but I will, Keenan Walker. Mike covered him with the Windy City Thunderbolts, shortly after the White Sox drafted him. So that's a story we often talk about here. So, you know, just the draft is something that we cover a lot, quite frankly. As a beat writer, someone covering the sport, you know, like your first draft, you know, like in the 2000s, how has the draft changed, or even just covering it as a beat writer? You went to the Cubs, you know, Chris Bryant, and it's more of a event now. You know, it's never going to be what the NFL draft is, but it's a lot different. So how did that change, like as a beat writer covering it then and then, you know, now?
I think the way it is now, especially with the slotting system, changes the landscape quite a bit, and has. And some scouting directors I've talked to become very frustrated by the slotting system because it gives, they feel, an advantage to the teams that don't invest on those higher risks like they used to. So it kind of frustrates them quite a bit. But I've always been in the feeling, and it's probably goes against the trend of a lot of people's thinking, that I think you should connect on the first round pick. There's so many good players in the country that you should be able to identify that guy who gets to the major leagues and helps you in some form. Now, granted, some guys have injuries and you can't forecast those in most cases unless he's got a mechanical flaw. But I really do believe you should be able to connect on that first round pick. Now, after that, a lot of things come into play. But I think there's just so many good players in the nation that you should be able to identify the right guy.
What do you remember from covering the Chris Sale draft? I mean, obviously, you know, coming into that draft, you know, he was seen as, you know, not the 13th overall pick. He was kind of a top five guy and whatever. There were the issues about money and the way he throws or whatever, but then he fell to 13 and signed for slot, and he was right up here. So what are your What do you remember about that night and just, I guess, covering when they took him?
I was stunned that he kept slipping and slipping and slipping. And then I thought, well, he's right there for the White Sox. And I compliment the organization and his representatives because where he went was somewhat alarming. But there's always a feeling if you're good enough, you'll make the majors and make up that money right away. And he probably made up what he lost in money where he was supposed to be projected in a hurry. He made that money right away because he was on the big league roster for almost 2 months. So you prorate that rookie salary and add it to his bonus. He's about right there where he should have got in the first place. So big kudos to the Sox organization and to his representatives for seeing that and getting a deal done.
Well, and now it seems like, you know, that obviously happens, right? Like we cover a draft and the White Sox give Jared Kelly $3 million in the second round. That's one of these things that's kind of arranged ahead of time and they push him to that spot. It doesn't seem like that happened with Chris Sale. He just like kind of started falling and they capitalized, which made it a little bit different. And obviously they put him on the big league roster. You can't do that anymore. That was a big part of it. So then I think your last draft on the White Sox beat was Tim Anderson. And, you know, we kind of talked similarly earlier, like they did. They had a propensity early on for taking athletes, and Kenny Williams, you know, I'm just going to say it, like he liked athletes and Jerry Reinsdorf didn't like spending money on the draft. And that's how you end up with the Keenan Walkers of the world. So I think when Tim Anderson's drafted out of a community college in Mississippi, it's like, oh, here we go again. But this one turned out quite differently, obviously.
Yeah. But before we talk about Tim, I want to point out too that remember, they always went the safe route too with college pitchers. I mean, two guys that come to mind are Lance Broadway and Kyle McCullough. So, you know, you get what you pay for in some regards if you're going to go that safe college pitcher route. Now, in regards to Tim, you know, the negative stuff on him was regards to his fielding. And a lot of people thought, well, he's a terrific athlete, but we're not sure about shortstop. And Tim, to his credit, really quelled those questions right away with his fielding and throwing. And I give the guy a lot of credit because I just remember there was an avalanche of criticism and skepticism over his fielding abilities, and he addressed those right away. So tip of the cap to him and Sox development for taking care of that right away.
Mark, when it comes to speaking to scouts, now that the draft is pushed back a little bit, you know, because what we're doing right now is a couple of months prior to the draft or a few weeks prior to the draft, I should say, is it seems like, you know, the scouts have already done all their homework and now they're moving on to the next year's class. I just wonder what that's like looking ahead so far into the future while also trying to balance the current year's draft class while also trying to learn about what you have in front of you.
It's funny you say that because I was in the Bay Area a couple of weeks ago for a wedding and stopped by Stanford to see a couple of guys as well as the son of a friend who plays for USC. And I ran into a scout, let's just say he works for an American League Central club. I won't say which team. And we started talking players. And then he said, well, I might go across the street and watch this kid, Henry Bolte from Palo Alto High play because they were playing about an hour later. And quite frankly, you can cross one street and get to Palo Alto High from Stanford. That's how close it is. So he had mentioned that more information now than ever, you got to get as many set of eyes you can on these guys, because between the end of their seasons, the draft, that's a good month. And you only have so many times to watch these guys in person. Therefore, it behooves this guy, as well as all the other scouts, to watch these guys as much as they can until their seasons end, because after that, it's a different landscape, you know, just to watch them work out, or, you know, they have that MLB scouting combine, which only tells you so much. And you can bet that there's a lot of advisors telling their guys not to perform. So they don't hurt their draft stock. So it's very important now, especially with the NCAA tournament starting, that these teams get as many looks as they can on these guys prior to the draft, which isn't going to happen for another, 5-6 weeks. So it's a different landscape, I'll tell you that.
So, you know, you were on the Cubs beat at the time when the White Sox switched over from Nick Hostetler to Mike Shirley. You know, they didn't hire Mike Shirley right away. They interviewed some people and then ended up going internally. But Nick Hostetler oversaw four drafts during the rebuild. And, you know, whether it was an organizational mandate or not, you know, they went super college heavy in those drafts. And, you know, part of me understands like you want to get a bunch of baseball players in your system and insulate your system and you know, they've had a lot of contributors from those years, but it kind of lacks upside. So I guess, what are your thoughts in hindsight? And you weren't covering the team, but what did you think at the time, if you remember?
In regards to Mike Shirley taking over?
No, just like them deciding to rebuild, but going super college heavy for, it seemed like, you know, a couple straight years like into that rebuild.
Yeah, I think in some ways they had to do it that way. I thought some of the drafts that they fell short on, I won't put that all on Doug Lawman. I think there's a lot of voices in that room when it comes to making that pick. You know, certainly Nick had an aggressive college type philosophy there. I think Nick Madrigal was under his watch, and so was Jake Berger. And I understand why they took those guys at that spot. And I know that there was some curiousness about the Jake Berger pick, but I think if he was healthy, you'd see why. I mean, I like the guy. I wish he was a little more mobile, but certainly he's had the leg issues, so that's an issue. But I think he's a guy that is a ball player, and I hope for the kid's sake that he stays healthy, and we'll see what he can do. But I understand why, you know, Nick went about that way. And it's kind of funny looking at last year's draft, how they went the high school way. And I think there's a lot of promise there. So and a lot of it, too, depends on where you pick and where the ceiling is.
So, Mark, as you evaluate the organization as a whole, you know, the White Sox are at the top of the list in terms of their prospect status with Michael Kopech and Andrew Vaughn and Luis Robert at the top there. And then they all graduated and now they're at the bottom. However, it seems like there's a handful, at least to us, of really promising prospects. And it just that turn of being top five, now bottom five in the organization while the White Sox window is apparent is, I guess, on schedule. But when you take a look at the way the organization is structured right now in terms of the talent and even the personnel leading the organization, leading the charge at the higher positions, you mentioned Marco Patti. We talk a little bit about Chris Getz as well as Mike Shirley. What is your confidence level in the way the organization is structured now to suggest that they're going to have success moving forward for multiple years?
It's a good question because I think there are signs where they might have success, but I think a big thing is depth right now. And I think it was James Fagan of The Athletic wrote a story, or maybe it was another blogger, Jim Margolis, had talked about if you're relying on Danny Mendick and upset he's not hitting, that's certainly not a good thing. And I understand that it kind of speaks to depth and quality depth. Certainly Mendick's a versatile guy, but certainly want to, you know, you wish you had prospects at every position that have to wait before they get called up. That's usually the way, a perfect scenario. That's the way it goes. They don't have that right now because of the graduations and some injuries and such. So that's kind of setting them back. But I do think there is some promise. I think right now there's kind of a gulf between the big league club talent and down in the minors. It's kind of patchy right now. I think at some time soon they'll be able to fill it, but you know, they got to win now. Well, let's face it. We talk about the Kopechs and Vaughns and Roberts and Jimenez, but that pitching staff, you know, the starters, a couple of starters, you know, they have some age on them and they're going to need guys to step in because it's not 100% sure that Giolito's going to re-sign with them. I think the expectation is he will, but nothing's guaranteed until he signs. So that's one area you got to have some fallback insurance to have right there, as well as some parts of the infield as well. So I think the hope and expectation is that some of these guys like the Colson Montgomerys and Wes Cass will continue to develop. I kind of like that draft quite a bit, especially with those two guys, high school guys with great talent and plenty of upside still there. So we'll have to wait and see, but I think there's a little bit of a patchy work that needs to be filled up at the top.
So what were, you know, when Major League Baseball kind of took over, they went to the 20-round draft, like, you know, 40 was too many. The debate is whether 20 is enough, obviously. And then, you know, just the reduction of the minor leagues. What were your thoughts on that when they did it? And then, you know, has that changed at all? Like since you've seen it, I guess, over the last year and a half.
Absolutely hate it. I hated it when they cut it down to, I know COVID cut it down to 5 rounds, but I still think 20 is not enough. I really wish there was one more layer of minor leagues. You just never know when that guy might pop. And I know the odds are long, but I think 30 would have been fair. For one thing, you wouldn't see the Sox draft some of their kids of employees. That got eliminated by cutting it to 20 rounds. But I do think that it hurts everybody, not just the Sox in regards to that. And I think 30 rounds is fair enough, because you have some guys that are obviously filling, guys that have no chance of making the majors, but there's always that guy that might need a little more seasoning, and maybe he's not the greatest student and he majors in baseball. So why not expand to 30 rounds where he can devote all his time to baseball and not waste some of his time in the classroom when you know he's not a student?
Yeah, I mean, one of the biggest issues, and, you know, we cover the teams. Last year, I don't know how much you paid attention, but like the Kannapolis team in low A, I mean, the Sox sent a bunch of young guys there that have no business playing in A ball, but there's nowhere else to send them because, you know, your short season rookie was eliminated in Great Fall. So it's either short season Arizona or Kannapolis, which is a huge step. I mean, it used to be double A was, you know, the big indicator. Lately, it's been low A because there's guys that just don't belong there, and it's sink or swim time, and a lot of guys sink.
And I think it's made by decision makers who don't realize the maturity rate of players or how much time is needed to really have a fair chance at each level. You know, I always remember there was an old saying, it takes, 1,000 at bats for a guy to have any chance of being ready for the majors. But the bigger issue is down in those lower levels where they're away from home for the first time. Especially the guys in warm weather got to play in cold weather for the first time. There's a lot of factors involved in that, and they weren't considered when they made these decisions. And they also hurt the small communities, which I think is the biggest blow, because I think a lot of these small communities look forward to having baseball in their towns, having kids they can host. I mean, that's gone by the wayside because of COVID, but it was really something for the town to rally around during the summer months.
Mark, I got a couple more for you. I really appreciate your time. You've been very generous. What was it like working with the White Sox front office? Just some of the personalities and Kenny Williams and Rick Hahn while you were there.
I enjoyed it. I mean, certainly you bump heads now and then, you know, looking for more answers than what they're just giving you. But, you know, I think I've had a healthy relationship with Kenny Williams, just knowing him the way I do. We can tell each other what we think of each other's opinions sometimes and move on, not take it personally. Rick's pretty direct, straightforward. He's got a fascinating background with his law work and then working in an agency briefly, but I think he understands the structure of baseball from all facets. So that helps quite a bit.
What was an experience that just has never left your thoughts or your memories covering that ball club?
I think it was like shortly after the World Series, and Kenny Williams was talking to us about what it meant for a lot of employees and their parents and grandparents. And Kenny was talking about his secretary and how she went to her father's grave and put a White Sox banner on his grave as to like, hey, we did it. We're champions and you're a champion, Dad. And that was kind of the theme that has always stuck with me to this time, just how it meant for generations. And especially then, you know, I can understand why a lot of White Sox fans are tired of hearing about the Cubs. And I think that was the moment where Cub fans could say, hey, we don't care what happens on the north side. This is our time. And it really, really stood out that White Sox community could really rally and enjoy the moment and not care about anything else in the world.
Mark, thanks so much for sharing all your insight. Any advice for young journalists out there these days?
Soak up as much information as you can. Learn a second language. Polish it up very well. Oh, and one more thing I want to mention about the farm system is we've seen some guys get paid over slot. And one guy I'm curious about is Dahlquist, because he's off to a rough start. Paid a lot of money to get him out of his commitment to Arizona. That's one guy to keep an eye on, because they can't afford too many slip-ups like that right now.
No, I'm glad you brought up Andrew Dahlquist. We're big fans of Dahlquist, or at least I am here on the show. What's your impression, just since we have you? What do you like about him? What do you dislike about him?
I see the upside still, but that ERA, I know it's only been 9 starts. It's a little high right now. I can understand him. I mean, he had a price and he got it, so, you know, tip of the cap to him, but got to be careful. Sometimes college is the best way to go. Although if he went to Arizona, he'd have Brian Anderson as one of his assistant coaches. So yeah. Who knows where that would have gone.
Pretty awesome. Mark Gonzalez, thanks so much for your time. Really appreciate everything you do.
Take care, guys. Thank you for having me.
That was Mark Gonzalez joining myself and James Fox here on the Future Sox podcast, giving us a lot of insight. Love his stories. about covering the Diamondbacks and working with Barry Bonds. And then a lot of the relationships that he developed within the White Sox organization. I mean, it's just insight that you just don't get unless you're face to face in the industry there. So Mark was kind enough to give us his time. And I hope you enjoyed listening to his perspective as a journalist, even giving some advice to young journalists out there. So hopefully you learned something, because we sure did. Next week, we will talk to you again on Tuesday. Again, every Tuesday, we drop podcasts here on the Future Sox Podcast, part of the Blue Wire Network and SoxMachine.com. For James Fox, my name is Mike Rankin and Mark Gonzalez. Thanks so much for tuning in. We'll talk to you all next week.